Okay, thank you so much. It's so good to be back here again and learning together with you. Thank you all for it's so wonderful to see how many young women come and volunteer to learn in after school hours. So it's really special. I was told that the topic to speak about tonight is Shabbos and its song. So I assume Zemiros and something related to Shabbos and Zemiros. Has the whole theme of this has been all about Shabbos every week? So the last one is about Zemiros on Shabbos. So I was thinking to myself that it's one day before Shavuos, and on the surface you would think that one day before Shavuos we would be talking about Shavuos, right? But we're talking about Shabbos. Is there any connection between Shabbos and Shavuos? And the answer is a resounding, absolutely yes. There are absolutely connections between Shabbos and Shavuos. First of all, this year, certainly here in Chutz La'aretz, there's a major connection between Shabbos and Shavuos, and that is Shabbos is on Shavuos. Shavuos is on Shabbos. So we actually get to have Shabbos and Shavuos at the same time. So that for sure. Not only that, Shavuos is celebrated after counting a series of 7 days for 7 weeks. So a lot of the number sevens in terms of determining and leading up to the Yom Tov of Shavuos. And Shabbos, of course, is the very first number seven. It is the most important number seven. But there's something else also. There's another important link between Shabbos and Shavuos. You see, when Moshe Rabbeinu brought us the Torah after 40 days in Har Sinai, the first time, it was sort of a fail. It didn't work out the way we had planned. Right? What happened? He comes down from the mountain, and what does he see? The Egel. So it didn't work out so well. He had to break the Luchos. He went back up the mountain, came down a second time. What day did he come down the second time? Yom Kippur. And in Yom Kippur, he comes down and his face is shining. He's absolutely radiant. The Torah tells us about this at the end of Parshas Kisisa, that Moshe Rabbeinu was Karan or Panav. His face is shining. His face is radiant. And then, the very next few Pesukim, at the very beginning of Parshas Vayakel, you know what the Torah teaches us about? Shabbos. The aftermath, the immediate aftermath, the very next thing the Torah follows up, Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from Har Sinai and bringing us the Torah with, the very next thing the Torah tells us about is Shabbos. And that's a little bit curious, that would be the very next thing the Torah teaches us about. The Torah is obviously trying to teach us some connection between the shine that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get by going on Har Sinai, the shine that he had on his face, so much so Chazal said that he needed to wear a veil of some sort or a mask, different translations, but it means basically the same thing, that people couldn't look at him because his face was shining so much. There must be some connection between that and Shabbos. Not only that, Vayakel, what does the word Vayakel mean? To gather. So what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu gathers all the people together, and he makes this big gathering, and he teaches them about Shabbos. But guess what? They already learned about Shabbos. Gatherings in general, first of all, are not really to teach about mitzvos. Meaning, we have 613 mitzvos. We do not have 613 gatherings of Klal Yisrael. Well, you know when you have gatherings, like when do you have an assembly in school? When do people gather together? Well, for a graduation, mazel tov to the graduating seniors. For a graduation, you'd have a gathering, you'd have a vayakel. For introducing new leaders, if the school hires, I don't know, a new administrator or something, so they'd gather everyone together. Did that just happen? Okay, so they would gather everyone together and introduce you to the new person, or maybe a farewell to whoever is retiring, leaving or whatever, right? I mean, that's when we do, I honestly didn't know that that's happening, but that's when we do gatherings. Why is there a gathering? You know, I don't know, Matan Torah was a gathering because it was an event. It was God giving us the Torah. That's an important gathering. Since when do we do gatherings for a mitzvah, for Shabbos, which is a mitzvah? And like I mentioned before, this isn't even the only time we learned about Shabbos in the Chumash. If it was, I'd understand. Shabbos is very special. But there are plenty of times throughout Chumash that we learn about Shabbos. So why does Moshe have to gather everybody, tell them something that they already knew? So the idea, I think, over here can be best expressed based on a Bal HaTurim. The Bal HaTurim explains that the juxtaposition, which means the connection, the link between two things that are next to each other, of Moshe Rabbeinu's radiant face at the end of Parshas Kisisa and the command of Shabbos at the beginning of Vayakel can be understood based on a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, which says that on Shabbos every Jew's face radiates. That if a Jew knows how to tap into Shabbos, then their face radiates. I'm reading a biography now. I love to read Gedolim biographies. Sometimes people don't like Gedolim biographies so much because they say they never tell you any of the challenges and the bad stuff. They only tell you the good stuff. Well, guess what? I don't want to know the bad stuff. I only want to know the good stuff. I want to be inspired. I love Gedolim biographies. So I'm reading a biography of Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Ketana of Panovich. Yeshiva Ketana in America usually means 1st through 8th. In Israel, it means 9th through 12th, usually. So he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Ketana of Panovich, and it describes that as a whole chapter about Shabbos by Rav Michal Yehuda, and how his face would shine throughout Shabbos. Rav Soloveitchik once described what Shabbos was like in Warsaw, where he lived for some time in Europe before the war. And he writes, Shabbos was unique in Warsaw. The closed shops, the flickering light of the Shabbos candles shrinking through thousands of windows created a festive atmosphere. The streets were filled with men of all ages on their way to the various shuls, Ger, Lublin, Novominsk, Vizhnitz, Belz, Alexander. Some were dressed in long robes with fur shtreimelach on their heads, regardless of the season, running to their respective shtibelach. Many of them probably suffered from poverty during the week. But on Shabbos, their faces were radiant. They forgot their sorrows and thrust despair out of their souls. Their only desire was to reach a state of ecstasy which would bring them closer to their Maker. And he would often repeat this description of salvation, would repeat this description of what a Jew looks like on Shabbos. Even the poorest Jew would look like on Shabbos. It would look like this on Shabbos. Even someone who looked as forlorn as you would expect them to look during the week would transform on Shabbos. Rav Valdi and Ali Shur and Chelik Beis says that Rav Yeruchim Levavitz, the Mirim Mashkiach, would undergo such a transformation on Shabbos that it got to the point that new Talmidim in the Mir, the new Bachrim that came to the yeshiva that had only seen Rav Yeruchim previously during the week and had never seen him on Shabbos, didn't recognize him on Shabbos. They thought there was a different Mashkiach for Shabbos than there was during the week. He so tapped into Shabbos and took on a new look on Shabbos. In fact, the Sefer Mayana Shel Torah quotes the Sfas Emes that he says, that's why, you know, there's a halacha when you have Sheva Brachos on Shabbos. I was just at a wedding this week. They're having Shavuos Sheva Brachos, I guess. But every Sheva Brachos has at least one Shabbos in it, right? I'm sure some of you have siblings who got married. You've been to a Shabbos Sheva Brachos. What does every Sheva Brachos require in order to be able to recite the seven Brachos? So you need panim chadashos in every Sheva Brachos. So sometimes they'll just, it's always tricky because it had to have been someone who you're not close enough with to invite to the wedding, but, you know, won't be insulted by being invited just to be panim chadashos. So, it's a little bit of a tricky invite, but Shabbos, you don't need panim chadashos. There's no requirement for panim chadashos. Why not? So says the Sfas Emes, because we're all panim chadashos on Shabbos. That we all have the Kedusha Shabbos, when we tap into the Kedusha Shabbos, we all have that shine of Moshe Rabbeinu's face. A starving pauper and a financially successful business person could stand shoulder to shoulder and you can't tell the difference between them. They're all wearing nice suits, they're all dressed up nicely, they're standing shoulder to shoulder in shul. You can't tell the difference between them. And that helps us understand the glow of Moshe Rabbeinu's face was earned when he went beyond this world and he had a direct encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara Chagiga tells us that Hashem created a very special kind of light, that he was gonez l'tzadikim l'asodavo, that he put away, he reserved for another world. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went up to Har Sinai, was able to access some of that light. Shabbos is also me'ein olam haba. If Moshe Rabbeinu was able to tap into something that was hidden away for Olam Haba, and that's where he got that special shine, when we tap into something that's Me'ein Olam Haba, we also tap into that special shine. And that's the juxtaposition, that's the connection. The end of Parshas Kisisa, which speaks about Moshe Rabbeinu's glow, and the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, which speaks about the day that we can each gain our own glow, the day of Shabbos. So while the Jewish people, of course, we knew about Shabbos from a lot of other times in the Torah that it taught us about Shabbos. But Moshe Rabbeinu said at the beginning of Vayakel, I need to gather the Jewish people together. And Rashi says that that gathering happened mimachras Yom Kippurim, the day after Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai. And the Nesiv HaShalom explains, the son of a Rebbe, that even after the Kapara for the Cheda Egel, even after we had Yom Kippur, so we finally got a Kapara for the Cheda Egel, there's still a little bit of a stain of the Cheda Egel that remains with the Jewish people. Anytime we get punished for everything, you know, like sometimes if you do something, I'm sure everyone here is a perfect angel and you never had to get punished for anything by your parents, by anybody else. I mean, after all, you're coming and volunteering to learn. This is a special group. But imagine, I'm sure you all have a sibling who maybe once did something wrong that required some punishment. Right? So sometimes they'll get their punishment or they'll and you think it's over. And no one mentions anything of their misdeed, of what they did wrong, until the next time. And then they do it again. And this isn't the first time you did this. Right? It always comes back. It's never really, really gone. And the Cheda Egel works that way. That, yeah, Hashem says, okay, Yom Kippur, Kapara, you're forgiven, don't worry. Oh, but next time we do an Aveira. There's still a Cheda Egel. There's still a stain of the Cheda Egel. How do we escape that stain of the Cheda Egel? So says the Nesiv HaShalom, the Slonimer, that the Gemara in Shabbos Tav Kuf Yud Ches gives us the trick. It tells us, Kol HaShomer Shabbos Kehilchasa Afilu Oved Avodah Zarah Kidor Enosh Mochlin Lo. If a person keeps Shabbos properly, then even Oved Avodah Zarah, Cheda Egel, we get a real full mechila. It's the Yom Tchila LeMekrei Kodesh. It's the beginning of our achievements in Kedusha. And the way that Shabbos helps us achieve forgiveness for the unforgivable is related to this idea of Panim Chadashos. Because how does tshuva work? What's tshuva? Tshuva, the Rambam describes. When a person does tshuva, they have the ability to say, Ani ish acher. I am not the same person that did that Aveira. I'm a different person. Well, guess what? On Shabbos, we become a different person. We become Karan or Panav. We are Mashana Shmo, like the Rambam describes. We're able to be someone different. So it's so critical that we learn to properly tap into Shabbos. And that's why it's so beautiful to have this initiative where you guys are learning six times about the value of Shabbos and different elements of Shabbos. And I want to talk a little bit about one very special way to tap into the beauty of Shabbos. And that is what I was assigned to talk about, which is Zemiros. How much time do I have left? I could talk a little bit about Zemiros? Yeah? So let's talk a little bit about Zemiros. It's an interesting thing. You've all heard of Zemiros. You probably, most of you, I would imagine, sing Zemiros around your Shabbos table at least from time to time, if not every single week. You all have benches at your Shabbos table that are full of the very same Zemiros, right? And yet, if you look through the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, it never says anywhere that you're obligated to sing Zemiros on Shabbos. So where did it come from? Where did we figure this out, this secret out? You're supposed to sing Zemiros. And if you actually look at who wrote the Zemiros, they're all over the map. There are some Zemiros that were written by Rishonim. Yom Shabbosun was written by Rabbi Yehuda Levi, was a Rishon. Kiyashmer Shabbos was written by the Ebenezer, was a Rishon. Some of them were written by the great Mekubalim, from the people around the times of the Arizal. Some of them were written by Achronim. Koyachsov was written by an Achron. You have all these different Zemiros from different time periods. Where exactly does it come from? So let's first talk about what a Zemer means. That Shoresh, Zayin, Mem, Resh, to be Zomer, what does Zomer mean? Anyone know that Shoresh at all? Other than song, what else does it mean? So it literally is used in throughout Mishnayos, really, in different contexts. Of Zemiras, you ever hear of a Zemiras Gefanim, or of an Ilan, that they prune a tree. I don't know how many of you are into gardening, I don't even know what it's called when you do gardening with trees, but when you're growing things, in order to allow things to grow sometimes, you got to cut out the bad stuff. You have to find the weak branches, cut them out so that the strong branches will have the space to grow. In the Sefer Menorah Samar, he writes, that's what a zemer is. He says, L'chein nikru hashirim mizmorim miloshon lo tizmar. The pasuk in the Torah that you're not allowed to be zomer during Shemitah year. Ulfiza Zmiros Rotzalomar Zmuros. Kishem Shamazamer Bikafanim Yakots Kol Hazmuros Vianiach Masharoi Lirativ. Just like when you're pruning your vineyard, you take out the bad stuff and you leave only the strongest things. Kach hazmiros sha'anu omrim kodem atfila. He's talking about psukei dezimra, but it's the same thing for the zmiros that we know of. Yasiru v'yakutsu kol hamichsholos v'avonos sheyesh lanu l'fnei Hashem. We'll cut away all of the stumbling blocks, all of the averos that we have, and then we're able to really daven and reach out to Hashem. U'kashetavu tefilasenu sh'tiyah nishmas u'ritzuyah l'fnei Hashem. Then our tefilos are going to be totally accepted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I mentioned before that in the Gemara, it doesn't say anywhere that you have to sing Zmiros and Shabbos. It doesn't say you have to. But there is one place that the Gemara refers to what a Jewish Shabbos table should look like and how Zmiros is part of it. The Gemara Maseches Megillah talks about the pasuk in the Megillah that I'm sure you all know. Bayom hashvi'i kitov lev hamelech b'yayin. Who's the melech? Achashverosh is a simple pshat, right? That he's always the melech. But very often, the Gra points out, Achashverosh is called Achashverosh, sometimes called the melech Achashverosh, and sometimes he's just called Hamelech. And when he's just called Hamelech, the Gra understands that it could also be understood that it's a reference to the main character of the Megillah, whose name is never mentioned in the Megillah. Who's the most important character in the Megillah, whose name is never mentioned in the Megillah? Hashem, right? He's obviously the main character of the Megillah, right? That's the whole story. Without Hashem, you don't have a story. You just have a bunch of coincidences, right? He's the whole story is Hashem. And his name never appears. So the Gra says it kind of does. Because every time it says HaMelech, it could somehow mean Hashem. So now let's look at that pasuk. Bayom HaShvi'i Kitov Lev HaMelech B'yayin. So says the Gemara that what happens on Yom HaShvi'i, what's Yom HaShvi'i? Shabbos. The Gemara says, Yisrael ochlin v'shosin. Jewish people eat and drink on Shabbos. Maschilin b'divrei Torah u'b'divrei tishbachos. And we start speaking Torah and we start singing praises. Avlov dekhavim sh'ochlin v'shosin ein maschilin ela b'divrei tiflus. But when other nations drink, eat and drink, they start speaking nonsense and immoral things, and we're busy with tishbachos. That's Tov Lev HaMelech, makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu very happy when he sees how Klal Yisrael is involved in Tishbachos. The Tishbachos are the Zmiros that we sing every Shabbos. In fact, the Zohar writes explicitly, Utzrichin le'etara shira v'chedva le'petura le'gaba, which means that we need to have shira and chedva rejoicing on by the tables, by the Shabbos tables. Not only that, whenever we have shiros v'tishbachos at any su'uda, it elevates the su'udah. You know, there's a halacha in Hilchos Purim that you must have a su'udah's Purim. It's one of the mitzvos of Purim. In Chanukah, Hilchos Chanukah, there's no din that you must have a su'udah. But the Shulchan Aruch says that if you have a su'udah on Chanukah and you have shiros v'tishbachos, then it becomes a su'udah's mitzvah. When you sing and you sing God's praises at a su'udah's Chanukah, that becomes a simcha, it becomes a su'udas mitzvah. And that's why Zmiros on Shabbos became such a big deal for Klal Yisrael. The Sefer Yesod V'Shorash HaAvodah writes, V'yizara adam l'chabed es Hashem mehono u'migrono. Migrono means from your throat. L'zamer Zmiros u'shvachim al ha'shulchan. That a person is supposed to honor Shabbos with their throat, with the talent that Hashem gave them, to be able to sing. In the Beis Aharon Mikarlin, he writes that the Zmiros are like knafayim l'suda Shabbos. When you eat a suda Shabbos, you're doing a mitzvah. What are knafayim? Wings. The wings that bring that mitzvah up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that mitzvah of suda Shabbos up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, are the Zmiros that you sing. In the Sefer Eishel Avrami Bachach, was a great posek, Rav Ram Davni Bachach, he says, you even find that if a person is not even eating a su'uda l'shem shemayim, they're eating a su'uda because they really like pulled brisket. You know, so that's why they're enjoying their su'uda Shabbos. They love when they have those capons with the pulled brisket inside. Oh my gosh, it's so delicious. Right? That's what they're there for. They're not there because they're enjoying the mitzvah so much. But says the Eish L'Avraham Mipachach, even so, when it comes to Shabbos, and let's say you sing because you like singing, not because you're praising Hashem. You just love singing. A lot of people enjoy singing. I happen to be terrible at it, so I don't. I mean, I still like it, but no one else likes it when I do it. So I try to avoid it in public places. But there are people that just they sing because they love to sing. It's fun. It's enjoyable. Says the Eish L'Avraham Mipachach, anything that you do because you enjoy, but you're doing it on Shabbos, your own enjoyment is also a mitzvah on Shabbos. There's a mitzvah called Oneg Shabbos. And what's Oneg Shabbos? Enjoy, as long as it's appropriate, and it's not something that goes against the spirit of Shabbos, that helps enhance the spirit of Shabbos. It's all part of how we're supposed to experience Shabbos. So if a person is enjoying their zemiros, it elevates Onek Shabbos, and it elevates whatever you're doing to a great, great mitzvah. You know, there's a famous story. It's not such a nice story to tell if you say the names of both Gedolim. So I'll only say the name of one of the Gedolim that was involved. But there's a famous story that the great Stipler Gaon was once asked by another one of the Gedolim of his time, whose name we're not going to mention. See, the Stipler Gaon had a son who was extraordinary. Who was the Stipler Gaon's son? Chaim Kanievsky. See, when I was growing up, Chaim Kanievsky was known as the Stipler's son. Right? You probably heard of the Stipler as Rav Chaim's father. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky was extraordinary. Meaning from a very young age, he was learning constantly. He was Mesayim Kol HaTorah Kula every single year. The great Rosh Yeshiva from Baltimore, Rav Ruderman, once went to visit Eretz Yisrael. And when he came back from Eretz Yisrael, they asked him, how was your trip? And he said, it was great. I got to buy a mantle for a Sefer Torah. You know, a mantle is like the cloth thing they put over the Sefer Torah. They said, what? Why would you buy a mantle for a Sefer Torah? He said, because I went to visit the Stipler, and I asked if there's anything I could do for him. And he said, my son Chaim's frock, his jacket, is all worn out, it's all tattered, and he doesn't want to get a new one. If you could buy him a new one. So I bought Reb Chaim a new frock. I bought a mantle for a Sefer Torah. Reb Chaim's a walking Sefer Torah. Reb Chaim was like 30 at the time, 35, something like that. He was extraordinary, and everyone knew it. This other gadol, who is, a gadol whose name you would recognize, and is on par with the Stipler, asked the Stipler, you know, my son is not quite like Reb Chaim. He was a religious guy, Shomer Shabbos, but not quite like Reb Chaim. I think he became a professor and became a teacher of Hebrew and whatever. Not quite like Reb Chaim. So he asked the Stipler, what was your secret? How did you raise a son like Reb Chaim, and where did I go wrong? And the Stipler answered that at my Shabbos table, we always sang Zemiros. At your Shabbos table, you were saying Divrei Torah the whole time, but you never sang. And if you didn't have a joyous Shabbos table, if there was nothing to get excited about and to look forward to at the Shabbos table, then it makes sense that the children are not going to be as excited about the ruchnius that one is trying to impart when it comes to Shabbos. Now, to be sure, there are many gedolim that did raise gedolim without zemiros also, with just divrei Torah, because if they had children, that's all they wanted. All they wanted was more divrei Torah. My Rebbe Rav Shechter told us Rav Soloveitchik used to not sing at his Shabbos table, and one of his mechutanim was a Hasidish Rebbe. So the grandchildren, they said, whenever we go to the other Zaydi, we get beautiful Zemiros, because by the Hasidim, they're always singing. When we come to you, when we come to Soloveitchik, who's part of Brisk, which is a different tradition, we don't get any Zemiros. So Soloveitchik tried to sing, and he said, forget it, you're doing it all wrong anyway, so we'll just go to the other Zaydi if we want Zemiros. But there's something to tap into when it comes to Zemiros. In the Sefer Toldos Yaakov, it's a book about the Stipler. It says that someone asked the Stipler if you're allowed to sing psukim, because there are some people that said, you know, maybe you shouldn't sing these psukim in these zemiros because it's not nice to the Torah to sing psukim. And the Stipler got very upset, And he says, what do you want already? No one's learning Musar anymore. The only Yerushalayim we can get is by singing some Psukei Tefillah, some Divrei Shavach. And you're not even going to do that? You're going to take that away from us also? So Zemiros are critical. Now, just to make the point, there are two halachic points that have to be made about Zemiros. Meaning up until now we've been talking Hashkafa, we've been talking about why it's so wonderful, why it's so beautiful. We spoke about tapping into the specialness of Shabbos and how that gives you a certain glow and a certain shine and a certain radiance and why that relates to Moshe Rabbeinu's glow and shine. There are two halachic points that have to be made about Zemiros. What are the two halachic issues that come up with Zemiros? Any guesses? Kali shows one, good. What's that? Saying Hashem's name, exactly. Right on the mark, right away. First two, are there more that I didn't think of? Those are the two that I could think of. Kalisha and saying Hashem's name. So which one you want to talk about? Kalisha? Both? Okay. Both are important. We'll do the Hashem's name one quickly. There is a pasuk in the Torah. That you're not allowed to say Hashem's name in vain. There is a machlokas rishonim. If you say a brach levatala, is that called an isidar raisa of saying Hashem's name in vain? Or no, Hashem's name in vain is if you just walk around saying Hashem's name, like out of context. But if you were to say, oh, now I actually want to say it, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah Bidvaro. If you were to say that without a cup of water in front of you, right? So that's not in vain. You're saying a very beautiful thing. You're saying, blessed are you, Hashem, a God of the world, that everything happens because of your word, right? It's great. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful statement. It's not Hashem's name in vain. So that's Machlokas Rishonim. We assume that it's at least an Issa Drabanan to say a bracha when it's not connected to something. But there are certain times that you're allowed to say Hashem's name in different contexts. For example, many Rishonim hold that while you're learning Torah, if the name of Hashem comes up, even in the Gemara or in Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to say the Shem Hashem. Certainly in Pesukim, if you're reading a Pasuk that has Shem Hashem, as long as you read the whole Pasuk and you don't stop in the middle, you're allowed to say Shem Hashem. So that's a discussion when it comes to Zemiros. Is Zemiros enough like learning and enough like those kinds of contexts where you're allowed to say the Shem Hashem? Or is it not, it's just a song and therefore you should not say the Shem Hashem? So there are different traditions about this. My Rebbe told us that his Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik had a tradition in his family from his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, not to say the Shem Hashem in the Zemiros, to just say the word Hashem. Others, Rav Nevinsal writes, I think from Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Nevinsal is the Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim. He was a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Anyone here ever see Rav Nevinsal? Let's start with this. Show of hands, how many of you have heard of Rav Avigdor Nevinsal? Not so many. Have you ever seen him? Yeah, you've seen him. If you're ever walking around the old city of Yerushalayim and you see an older man with a gemara like this walking through the streets, and another younger man holding him, making sure he doesn't walk into anything, you've probably just seen Rav Avigdor Nevinsal, that's the older man going like this, and probably one of his sons, most likely Rav Chizkiya Nevinsal, making sure that his father doesn't bump into anything as he's learning Gemara. Rav Nevinsal was a chavrusa of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach for many decades. Rav Shlomo Zalman used to call him every Erev Yom Kippur to ask for a bracha, because he held that it's a very big skula to go into Yom Kippur with a bracha from a tzaddik, and he thought that Rav Nevinsal was as big a tzaddik as exists in this world. He's bli ayin hara, still alive. He's not a young man anymore, still alive. Rav Nevinsal is an extraordinary person and personality. He also has a great sense of humor and is very easy to talk to. Rav Nevinsal writes that yes, you're allowed to say Shem Hashem in Zemiros, but you can't stop in the middle if you're saying the Shem Hashem. Meaning if you're saying the Shem Hashem, you have to finish the idea. You have to finish the line. If you stop in the middle of the line and use the Shem Hashem, then it's going to be a problem. So he gives an example. Like a person says in the Zemer of Kol Mekadei Shvi'i, he says, don't say, Oave Hashem HaMechakim Bivinyan Ariel, and then stop. Because that's right, if you said Ave Hashem and you didn't say Hashem, you said the Shem Hashem, then you're right in the middle. But if you finish B'yom HaShabbos, Sisu V'Simchu, K'mekabel Mata Nachliel, then you're okay. So many people say, Mali Yulitzar Azos, why do I need to have to think about these things? Wouldn't it just be easier to just say Hashem and not say the Shem Hashem? Just curious. They're both minhagim are valid and perfectly fine. I'm just curious. In how many of your homes do you say the Shem Hashem, the actual Shem Hashem in Tzmiras? Okay, how many do you not? It's about 50-50, and I mean 20-20, and the other 60% don't sing. Okay, so when it breaks down pretty evenly, right? So two valid minhagim. So you can't go wrong. You follow, every community follows their traditions. What about Kol Isha in Zemiros? So what kind of question is that? What do you mean? Who are you singing in front of? Meaning, what does Kol Isha mean? Kol Isha is only if you're singing in front of somebody else. So the first question right off the bat that you have to ask is, why is it my problem? I mean, I don't mean me, I mean you, right? Meaning, if someone doesn't want to, is not supposed to be hearing Kol Isha, let them go away and not hear Kol Isha. Why is that my problem? So what's the answer? It's the same reason sneeze is your problem. Meaning it's the halacha is that you're not supposed to cause other people to do averos either. And I'll bring you a raya. The Gemara Masechta Sota tells us that one of the Amoraim said that he learnt of the maila and the value of yiras chet from a young girl. He said he learnt about schar mitzvah from an almana, but he learnt about yiras chet from a young girl. What was the yiras chet that he learnt from a young girl? So he said, this was in Sota Daf Chav Beis. He said that he overheard a young girl when she was saying Tachnun. Do girls say Tachnun? That's also debatable, right? I think in the Art School of Women's Siddur, the first edition did not have Tachnun. And then later editions, they did have Tachnun. There was a whole debate whether, show of hands, how many girls say Tachnun? Not so many, right? Okay. So in this Gemara, it says when this young girl would say Tachnun, he overheard her davening that Hashem, please don't let anybody stumble by seeing me and by having any sort of bad thoughts or anything like that. So you see, she held it was her problem. And what does the Gemara call that? Yiras chet. Not that she was afraid of her own avera. She was afraid of other people doing averos for her. So of course it does become our problem. So what do we do about Zemiros? So this is also one of those things. Different communities back in Europe, this goes way, way back, hundreds of years, different communities had totally different standards. The Chasam Sofer in a tshuva writes that women in the women's section in shul shouldn't sing along in davening because that's going to cause Kol Isha to be heard in the men's section, perhaps. Right? That's one tradition, to one, if you'll call it an extreme. Another tradition, any Yekis over here? Any German Jews? People of German descent? So the German tradition of Israel Hildesheimer and Rav Shamsher Raphael Hirsch held that at Zmiros, around the Shabbos table, they were allowed to sing together. The boys and the girls were allowed to sing together. And even when there were other people there, non-family members there. Now, that was written up in a tshuva called Tshuva Sridei Eish. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, one of the Gedolim in pre- and post-war Europe, the Sridei Eish writes that he grew up in a certain, in Hungarian communities, in Poland and Hungary, and he had been exposed to that kind of Judaism where it never would have been thought of to do something like that. And then when he came to Germany, he saw that there were all these gedolim that were doing things like this. And he said he didn't understand. You know, and he quotes a story that Rav Yisrael Salanter, when he came back from his visit to Germany, where he met Rav Israel Hildesheimer, and he saw that Rav Israel Hildesheimer was giving shiurim in Shulchan Aruch to women, and he said, wow, if a Litvisha rabbi were to come and to do that in his kihila, they would just fire him on the spot. But, and he would deserve to be fired, because in Litva that wasn't the way things ran. But halavai, that I should have a chelek in Gan Eden with Rav Israel Hildesheimer, because that's their tradition, and they're following their tradition. So, and then you have everything in between. I prefer the approach of Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Shurmbach is the Ravid, I think, of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. Very strongly credentialed from person. And he has in his Tshuvas Van Hagos, where he says that Meikra Din, if it's brothers and sisters sitting around the Shabbos table with their parents, for sure. Well, he says, Meikra Din, there's no problem to sing Zemiros, that everyone, the entire family, should sing Zemiros together. He said, if there are strangers at the Shabbos table, then they shouldn't sing Zemiros. Then the women should refrain from singing Zemiros. So there are basically three approaches. Right, there are those that suggest that women can always feel free to sing Zemiros because it's Kodesh and the men are singing also, and hopefully the men are listening to themselves singing and the women are just singing along. So that's one approach. That's the Sri Deish's approach. There's the approach on the other extreme, Rav Eliashiv, who held that no, it shouldn't be, the women shouldn't sing Zemiros at all. And then there's the approach of Rav Sternbach, which is that if it's just family, then the women absolutely should sing. Then the women, I shouldn't say absolutely, because he's not absolute about it, but then women should sing Zemiros, or can sing Zemiros, but when it's not just family, then they shouldn't. Should I take a poll about what the different practices are in everyone's homes? I'm sure there's a little bit of each in those homes, but in most homes, I would bet most of you land on Rav Sternbach. That would be my guess, is that that's how things... But everyone should follow their own tradition. So to quickly review what we did tonight. We started off by saying that Moshe Rabbeinu achieved a certain glow in his face. And right after the Torah tells us about that, it tells us about Shabbos. And we explain that the reason for that is that we also can have a special glow when we know how to tap into Shabbos. Because just like that glow came from Olam Abba, it was an Or HaGonos Tzadikim, we can tap into Olam Abba because we have a day that's Me'ein Olam Abba. And when we tap into that, we can have a different face, like Rav Soloveitchik described, the people in Europe running to the different shtibalach, and like the mirror mashkiach looked like an entirely different person, and like you don't need panim chadoshos on Shabbos, because everyone's a panim chadoshos on Shabbos. Then we spoke a little bit about the basis of Zemiros on Shabbos, and we said how, even though it's not explicit anywhere in Shas, or certainly in Tanakh and Shas, or in Shulchan Aruch, that you need to sing Zemiros of Shabbos, but of the great value of singing Zemiros, that the Zemiros can become like the wings that bring up our mitzvos, our Suda Shabbos, and how the stipler thought that he was zocha to his son, like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, because he sang Zemiros at his Shabbos table. You know, the stipler used to run around the country being a sandik at every bris that he was offered to be a sandik at, and someone once asked him, you know, it says that if you're a sandik at a bris, it's a skula that you can become rich, but you're still not rich, but you're Sandik at a million brisim. How can that be? And he said, what do you mean I'm not rich? I have a son, Reb Chaim. Is there anything richer than that? I can't imagine being richer than that. Having son. How did he get a son like Reb Chaim? He himself said, because of Zemiros Shabbos, and to tap into that, to use that special koach of Zemer, which prunes away all of the weak parts of our avoda and our personality in order to bring up our mitzvos and to do tshuva. And then we quickly touched upon and highlighted two of the halachic issues that come up with Zemiros, and we pointed out that both the issue of Shem Hashem as well as the issue of Kol Isha have many, many different traditions, many different opinions and posts. Him, and everyone should follow their own family traditions. Mazel tov to all the seniors on your upcoming graduation, and everyone should have a wonderful Yantif and a wonderful Shabbos that follows, full of Zemer.